Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of our podcast, Purpose Beyond Ourselves. I'm Joanna Im.
And I'm Jessa Glassman. We are super excited to be here with Abby Land, a former council member and the former mayor of West Hollywood, a former CEO of a medical care clinic for low-income communities, and the former CEO of the Trevor Project, a nonprofit created to provide crisis intervention and suicide prevention for the LGBT community.
She is very well known for her work in nonprofits and civic government, speaking at many events and championing lots of reform that supports all types of communities in need. And we just started this podcast, and I think our goals are to, explore different and more unconventional as well as conventional forms of activism and kind of explore different modes of like political thought.
Great.
Okay, so I guess for the first question for our listeners, can you just start by telling us a little bit about your background, especially within activism, and how you became the person you are today?
Well, that is a really easy question. So I have an eclectic background in the sense that when I was younger, I never thought that I would end up becoming, you know, an activist and someone fighting for people's rights. Mm-hmm. So I didn't prepare for that in a way, but without realizing it, I probably was always doing that. I just never named it. But my background, I actually came to Los Angeles many years ago because I was going to be an actress. Mm-hmm. And that's what brought me here. And most of my studies in school was about acting. And when I came here, I did try to do that a little bit. I have a feeling I wasn't actually that good at it, but also along the way, I ended up getting involved in what was then a neighborhood called West Hollywood. It was not its own city yet, and I got involved around the issue of affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And so I had a personal issue where I was getting evicted, and I had reached out to see kind of what my rights were. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, I found this group that really cared about affordable housing and making sure people, you know, had a place to live. And I got involved there. And that kind of woke up in me a more realistic and more kind of reality check of what I cared about. Because prior to that, I had been, you know, marched for ERA, which, by the way, we're still marching for. And I had, when I was much younger, I had, you know, done some activism in school around just equal rights for girls and boys. I'm old enough that I went to school, you couldn't wear pants if you were a girl.
Wow.
And I just thought that was kind of stupid. So I had had some activism, but it's really when I started working around the issue of affordable housing that I ended up jumping in, and kind of my life took a turn. Mm-hmm. in a way towards being much more focused on recognizing, you know, if you get involved, you have a chance to make things better.
Right. And kind of on that same note, we know that you helped to create the West Hollywood Community Housing Corporation, as well as the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience kind of getting those projects started in Los Angeles?
Sure. So, you know, West Hollywood became its own city in 1984, and I was a volunteer on that campaign to make the city a city. And then in 1986, I actually ran for city council and got elected to be a council member in the city and served there for a number of years. And when the city first became a city, one of our main issues, it was around the issue of affordable housing and preserving rent control and trying to find ways to have more affordable housing. And so the council at that time actually had UCLA do a study about what are some of the best ways the city could potentially reach that goal. Mm-hmm. And one of them was to create a nonprofit housing corporation. And so I was involved as a policymaker in making sure that that nonprofit housing corporation got funding from the city, and that, you know, we as a council member, I sometimes was the liaison to the Housing Corporation, always, you know, try to help them in any way that I could, both as a policymaker and also personally, because a city in and of itself doesn't always develop the housing. What we do is develop policies to help the housing, and sometimes we fund the housing. And obviously, if you fund a nonprofit developer, you have a better chance of having your dollars, go farther. So I'm proud of the work that I did with the West Hollywood Housing Corporation. They built housing in West Hollywood while I was a council member, and housing to meet special needs that we have in our community. Really, all of Los Angeles has them, but housing specifically for people with HIV, housing for seniors, housing for families. And the Housing Corporation is thriving. They do work not only in West Hollywood, but throughout the LA region, building really beautiful, affordable housing for so many people.
Okay. And because you focused so much in providing affordable housing, I guess I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on the current homelessness crisis in Los Angeles and kind of how we can combat the root causes of homelessness?
Yeah, I think if the three of us could truly answer that question, we would be in really great shape, because the truth is, it's such a complicated issue, but it's heartbreaking and it's frustrating, because there are so many cities that are not doing what I think are kind of basic things. And had they been doing them all along, we might still have a homeless crisis, but it would look very different. So in West Hollywood, early on, we adopted an ordinance that is called inclusionary housing. And what that was every time someone built a development, they had to either provide the housing on site, additional housing, a certain percentage had to be for low income people. And if they weren't going to provide it on site, through a lot of complicated formulas, they had to put their money into a housing trust fund. And that fund is what allowed the city to, build and help build other affordable housing. And if every city in LA County had that, that would be huge. And if we had it for the last 20 years, 30 years, it would be, there'd be a lot more affordable housing here. But a lot, even the city of Los Angeles doesn't have inclusionary housing. And it's one tool. We had rent control. And though the state has certainly taken away the ability of cities to regulate rents as much as we might like, rent control certainly was one tool to help it. I mean, the root cause is that there is not enough housing, that the cost of housing is more than many people can afford, and there is not enough being done to develop affordable housing for people, and looking at different models of housing, and looking at how you can get housing built quicker, looking at the zoning requirements, and building more density in certain areas so you can really, beef up the amount of housing that's being created.
Right. And we want to switch gears a little bit to talk about representation in public office. So following these past midterms, we saw kind of a wave of women holding public office. Why do you think it's important to increase representation of not just women, but members of the LGBT community, people of color, et cetera, in government?
Yeah, that's a great question. And boy, it was great to see a record number of women running. Just really great. And I hope that continues. I think it's really important. At the end of the day, you want your policymakers, to represent the people they're making policy about. And the more voices at the table, the better chance you have of getting policies that are really going to make the impacts that you want. And we all come with different perspectives, and you I mean, your job, of course, as an elected is to represent everybody. That is your job. But we all bring our history and our perspective to the table. And you want to make sure that the perspective from the LGBT community is there, that this perspective of the women's community, and actually, you know, that intersectional lens, because no one goes to the table as being just one thing, right? We all bring a diversity of experiences to the table. But for women especially, you know, we tend to, and these are kind of broad strokes, not every woman does this, and, you know, not every man doesn't do it. But, you know, we tend to be collaborators. We are team builders. We often look at what the issues are and look at the solutions based on negotiating, on listening to people, on entering dialogues. Yes, you know, women like power as much as men, and we know how to wield it. But, you know, we are very often very collaborative and willing to recognize what we don't know and get the information. And so I think, you know, our skills, our people skills, what they sometimes call those soft skills, are really important as you're trying to build consensus and come up with solutions to issues that are impacting your community. So I think we bring a lot to the table that should be there. Mm-hmm. And it's been great to see women getting elected. That they've done studies, you know, and they say, you know, women traditionally, again, I say traditionally because I think tradition is changing. And also, I don't want to say every woman, but we tend to, if you look at a job application and it has job requirements, and let's say there's, you know, 10 requirements, and you look at it and you go, you know, I can only do like 5 or 6 of these, you're not going to apply for the job. That tends to be how women are. And men, again, not every man, but many men, if they look at that list of 10 and they can do 2 or 3, they're going to go apply for the job.
Right.
So women just tend to really want to be qualified before they apply. And so it's been great that more women are recognizing they have the qualifications to do these jobs. You know, you don't have to be an expert on everything to be a phenomenal policymaker. You don't have to be an expert on everything to sit at the table and give your opinion. And it's been great to see women rising to the occasion and also recognizing sometimes you put it out there and you don't win. You know, and that's okay. Life goes on and you can try again. But, you know, it's okay to try something and sometimes not succeed, because you learn a lot while you do it. And it helps prepare you for the next time. And I think sometimes, you know, it's not that losing is easy. It's not. It's hard. I've lost. It's not fun. Mm-hmm. But it's also, you know, life goes on. And I think women learn that through this process, which is important.
Yeah. And we completely agree. And I think another goal of this podcast is to kind of encourage other students to engage in politics and become more informed. So we completely agree with your statements.
Yeah, and I think that's just, I'm so glad, because it is important. There are so many ways to engage as well. Yes, you can be an elected person. That's good. But, you know, people get elected because they have campaign managers and fundraisers and field reps, and there's not a lot of women in these positions, you know. So the more that we can get women involved in the whole political process, I think the better chance we have. Also, you know, sometimes I'm an idealist, but maybe we can even make the process better when there's, you know, more women involved, you know, in key leadership positions in campaigns. So there's many ways to be involved in the process, as well as being a candidate, as well as being the activist who goes to the meetings or, you know, rallies the school to do something to raise awareness, that's very important as well.
Mm-hmm. And we actually, I guess on the other hand of that, we wanted to ask you about kind of like what is traditionally or conventionally seen as politics. So I guess like this election season specifically. So one of the central debates, especially this election, is healthcare. And we also saw in a profile that you support single-payer universal healthcare. Why do you think that this is the best solution to the healthcare crisis?
Yeah, well, you are right. I think the recent polls show healthcare is one of the top issues that people are concerned about, and they should be. Mm-hmm. And I will say that the Affordable Care Act that was passed under President Obama is an act that has truly changed people's lives. More people have health coverage than before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is really scary to think that coverage could be rolled back in mm-hmm. states that aren't as committed. We live here in California. It's a state that's very committed to providing affordable health care and many other benefits to its citizens, but not every state is as committed. And so sometimes you need the federal government to take action. So I believe in this, in what we have. I'm a kind of Medicare for all person. You know, I think that everyone should have a basic level of health care. We do live in a country where there is private insurance, and some people are, you know, can afford it and are very happy with it. And I think transforming a whole system is challenging. So at the end of the day, I believe everyone needs to have their basic health care needs covered. No one should fear going to the doctor and thinking that they will go broke if they have a problem. So many people know there's something wrong and they won't go to the doctor because mm-hmm. they think they can't afford what's going to come next. And that's horrible, you know, and, so we need a system that covers all.
Very much agree. Yeah.
You know, and the Affordable Care Act, it's not perfect, but it certainly is moving us much more in that direction. And hopefully we elect a number of people that give us a majority to move that discussion forward, 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 and looking at how we build on it, not take it down.
Right. And we were thinking about kind of the other side of this, and a common criticism from the right, from people who do not support single payer or do not support even the ACA. So they would probably argue that it's not feasible to implement on such a large scale for the entire country. What would you say to someone who argued that?
Well, I would say look to all the other countries in the world that provide that to their citizens. You know, so I would say, you know, that that's unrealistic, that that's not true, that there is a way to do it. And again, we just have to look to kind of the rest of the world who provide these basic needs to their citizens. I might use a few other choice words, but I won't do it on your podcast.
Yeah. And I guess just to wrap up, what do you think that if there was one thing you wanted to let our audience know or one message you wanted to share with them, what do you think we can do as ordinary citizens to start changing the world and start creating the kind of activism that we need to progress?
Well, you know, I would say that there is no ordinary citizen, that each of us has the power and the ability to make change, because it's really just about getting involved. And, you know, I think it's so important, especially as women, that we are not judgmental about ourselves, right? It's like, oh, I didn't do enough. Oh, it didn't make a big enough difference. Oh, I could have. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what? Just jump in. Mm-hmm. Think about what is the issue you care about. And, you know, one way to get involved, you know, it sounds kind of corny, but simple acts of kindness make the biggest difference in people's lives. So you, sometimes just as you're walking on the street and you smile and engage with someone makes the biggest difference in someone's life. So little things make a difference. And then there are the, I'm going to go to the rally and I'm going to, you know, hold my sign up and scream and yell kinds of differences too. And you have to find which one works the best for you at wherever you are in your life, because we all have different stages of our lives. You know, sometimes you can do more, sometimes you got to pull back and do a little less, but you can literally do something every day to make the world a little bit better. And it might, you know, again, that might sound a little corny, but I meet people who do this every day. You know, whether it's through my work at the county, directing the Women and Girls Initiative, to my activism as in my own personal life, where I get to meet people who are just as committed as I am to change, to talking to not quite strangers on a podcast who clearly are trying to make a difference. There's so many of us out there. Remember that you're not alone as you're doing it, and that, you know, we just have to believe everything we're doing is making a difference. And some days you just don't see it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can get kind of bogged down by all of the things that aren't going the way you want. But just, you know, kind of focus on what you can do, little steps at a time. And really, you know, none of us is ordinary. Mm-hmm. Most of us are pretty extraordinary.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being on this podcast with us and sharing your insight on all these different issues, as well as how to get engaged in politics.
Well, thank you so much for doing it, and keep up the good work. I look forward to connecting at a later date with you all.
Thank you so much for listening to our first episode. And we hope you keep listening in and get more insight from all of these experts that we will contact in the future.
Yeah, we have a lot of really interesting interviews lined up, so we hope that you continue to tune in. Thank you.
Thank you.